I suspect that most who are here this afternoon know that the Bible was not written in English. The Old Testament, for the most part, was written in Hebrew. And when we look at the New Testament, it was written in Greek, Koine Greek. If you've been here on Sunday mornings, we have examined a word that was used quite often by Christians in the first century and since that time. This is the word agape. It describes a kind of love which is distinct from what we typically see in the world. It describes a love which we might sum up as unconquerable goodwill towards others. We spent a few weeks studying agape love in the New Testament. One of the things, though, that we've not looked at is when we look at the Old Testament, do we find in the Old Testament the concept or the idea of agape love? Now, again, as I mentioned earlier, we're dealing with a different language. Greek New Testament, Hebrew primarily the Old Testament. Well, so we wouldn't have the word agape in the sense that it's going to be Greek in the Old Testament. But we might ask, do we have a counterpart? Do we have really the opposite of agape love as far as the Hebrew language, or do we have at least something similar to it? Well, we do have, at least in many respects, some similar respects, we do have an Old Testament word that reflects to at least some degree the ideas associated with agape love. Now, when it comes to Hebrew words, that's not something that I have studied, so I generally defer to some people who are familiar with the language or some books. And I have done that for this lesson. There is a Hebrew word. It's a guttural sounding word, at least at the beginning. I'm going to pronounce it to the best of my ability. It's not going to be a perfect pronunciation. But it's something like chesed. Kind of clear your throat a little bit, and it begins with an H. So that sounds a little foreign to us, but that's the word that we're talking about today. Now this word, chesed, has some unusual connotations. It is a word which is kind of a multifaceted word. If you were to look at this term, you would find that in some places, several places, it describes loyalty. Loyalty to a covenant. Loyalty to an agreement. Also associated with this word, is it's used several times. It's a very common word in the Old Testament. It's one of the better known words. There's also the idea of faithfulness. We're going to be loyal. We're going to be faithful. We're going to be someone that you can rely on. In many places in our Bibles, I think you'll see this word translated with a word like kindness. Or if you see the word loving kindness, there's a good chance that it is this chesed love. Affection is also associated with this particular term. It is a word which may describe doing some good things for someone regardless of how we may feel about them. The Hebrew word that we are going to look at, this chesed word, sometimes describes doing a favor for someone. So as I say, there are a lot of different components to it, and there is, at least in some respects, some similarities to agape. But even though there is this word which describes things like doing a favor and being faithful, being loyal to a covenant, to an agreement, it seems to me that the consensus of scholarship says that it does not quite live up to the level of agape love. Thus, in this lesson, I want to contrast the agape love that we've been studying about from the New Testament with some of the places where we read about this chesed love. We start with the book of Genesis, going to pull several passages from Genesis, the first coming from Genesis chapter 20. They may remember that as part of Abraham's life, he met up with a ruler by the name of Abimelech. And Abimelech saw Sarah, looked upon her as a beautiful woman, and decided that he was going to take her and basically have her as a wife. Well, after Abimelech took Sarah, Genesis 20 says God appeared to this ruler in a dream. And God said to this man, "You're a dead man." Well, that wasn't literally true, but it was God's warning to this man that this lady's married. And if you don't give this woman back to her husband, you're going to die. Things are not going to go very well for you. Well, Abimelech protested to God, and he pleads ignorance. He says, "I didn't know that this woman was married. I didn't realize that Abraham was her husband." So, Genesis 20, verse 8. It's there that we read about, and you see the word "early" there, and that suggests that Abimelech was really concerned about this message he'd gotten from God. So Genesis 28 tells us that Abimelech, he gets up early in the morning. He begins to communicate with some people. And among the people he talks to is Abraham. Well, Abraham's kind of called on the carpet for saying that Sarah was a sister. As he tries to defend that, he says, "I described Sarah, my wife, as my sister because I was afraid." And then, we're probably familiar with that much of the story, and then we come to a little detail which may not be familiar to us. Notice verse 13. I'm not going to read it, but I think you're probably there and can look at that as well as I can with you. Verse 13 tells us that there was a time prior to this occasion when Abraham said to Sarah, "I want you to show kindness to me. I want you to do something. I want you to do a favor for me. Well, that word that's translated kind or kindness or favor is this word, chesed. And Abraham said, you're going to, I'm asking, show me this favor, this kindness. Now, try to imagine, based on the Sunday morning studies that we've had of agape love, trying to take that concept of agape and fit it into Genesis 20, verse 13. It doesn't fit very well. Now, if you look at the word that we're talking about today from the standpoint of do me a favor, well, that fits. But the idea of agape love that Abraham would ask his wife, if he had agape love for, to offer an explanation that was at least somewhat deceitful, does not square very well with agape love. Thus, when I look at Genesis 20:13, I'm reminded of the fact that if we're going to deal with people, we're going to deal with them honestly. That's agape love. We want the best for people, so we're trying to communicate things that are correct. But in this particular case, we have this word being used. This is what Abraham asked for his wife, from his wife, and it's not in line with agape love. So fear. As we think about agape love, that's something that we should practice, but sometimes people are afraid to practice agape love. Sticking with the book of Genesis, looking across the page though, now in Genesis chapter 21, verse 23. As we think about agape love and we try to contrast it with this word that we're looking at, we've got another story. Once again, the characters, the key characters, are going to be, for our purpose today, Abraham and Abimelech. In verse 22 of Genesis 21, we're told that Abimelech had reached a conclusion, this ruler, this king. He had reached a conclusion about Abraham. This ruler came to realize, Abimelech decided that God was with Abraham in all that he did. Because Abraham was someone who had God on his side, Abimelech looks at this situation and he's no fool. He's thinking, I don't want to be on the bad side of this guy, that's Abraham, because this God is with him. So Abimelech, maybe being a shrewd man, comes to Abraham and says, hey, I'd like to make a deal with you. Let's look at verse 23. This is Abimelech. He says, now therefore, swear unto me here by God, that thou will not deal falsely with me, nor with my son, nor with my son's son, but according to the kindness, there's our word, chesed, that I have done unto thee, thou shalt do unto me, and the land wherein thou hast sojourned. Abimelech comes along and says, I want this faithfulness from you, which again is about as close as we're probably going to get to agape love. I want you to be loyal to me as far as this agreement. He said, I know how the dealings have gone between us, and I want to make sure that I don't get any deceitfulness from you. And not only do I want to avoid deceitfulness from you, for me, but for my descendants. I want to make sure that, you know, we're always on good terms. Abimelech wanted this good treatment, but he doesn't express that with the idea or with the concept of agape love. Here you have this word chesed being used to describe reciprocal treatment. It is basically that definition earlier that I gave. I want you to return the favor. I've done good for you. I've given you back your wife. I didn't take your wife. I didn't mistreat your wife. I didn't molest your wife. So now with me and my descendants, you also make sure that you treat me in a good way. Just don't do anything bad to me. Now that's not necessarily a bad thing to do. I think you can probably make a case from within the scriptures to say that trying to treat people in an equal way, in a good way, certainly not a bad thing. However, that is not the concept. That is not what is being described when we deal with passages that talk about agape love. Agape love is that love which says, I'm going to do good for you. I'm going to do the very best for you, regardless of the circumstances. It may not be returning tit for tat, favor for favor. There may not be anything that you've ever done for me. However, agape love still says, I'm going to do my best for you. That's why Jesus, when he talked about loving our enemies with agape love, he was able to use this word because of what it describes. Agape love says, I'm going to do my best to love you, to help you, to aid you, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of what it costs. When you begin to look at the interaction between Abraham and Abimelech, we begin to see why, number one, agape love is used so commonly in the New Testament, especially by the Lord. And we begin to see just how distinctive it is. And that's, I think, what a lot of people miss. Christians and non-Christians, they don't have a good grasp of what this love means. Sticking with the book of Genesis, but moving forward a little bit. If you want to continue to follow along, let's flip over about 20 chapters to the point where we find Genesis chapter 40. Genesis 40, verse 1. Introduces us to some information about Joseph. Now, Joseph is that fella. He ends up in prison. And as Joseph is there in prison, he's got a couple of other cellmates, if you will. We don't know that they were in the same cell, but they're down there in the same prison. One of the people in the prison was the king's butler. The other was the king's baker. Both of these men had offended the ruler, the Pharaoh of Egypt. And as Joseph is down there with these two other men, one night, the baker and the butler, they both have a dream. And the dreams that these fellows had were perplexing. Joseph eventually learns about the dreams, and he comes along and tells the men, dreams can be interpreted by God. So let me know what your dreams are. Joseph, after hearing the dreams, tells the baker he is going to soon die. He's going to die by hanging, verse 22. And the butler is told that he's going to be restored to his position. Now, after Joseph interprets these dreams, it's here that we once again read about this word, chesed. And we find this word in Genesis chapter 40, verse 14. And that's where I'm going to start reading. Joseph says, he's given the information about the dreams, but have me in thy remembrance when it shall be well with thee. And Joseph said, I'm helping you out. And now, I don't want you to show me agape love. He says, I just want you to show me kindness. There's our word. Show me kindness, I pray thee unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. Joseph only asks for kindness. Return the favor. Be kind to me. And you know, if you're familiar with this story, what we find in verse 23. Joseph's request was forgotten. Once again, as you think about what happens here and contrast it with agape love, you get a pretty powerful contrast. When a person has agape love for someone, they want to follow through with their word. They've made a promise, they've made a commitment, and that agape love, that motivates them to try to do what they promised. Now, sometimes people forget. I would not affirm, I'd not be comfortable saying, I think it would be false to say that if a person has agape love, they're always going to remember anything and everything. Well, that's simply not true. However, if a person has agape love, they've made a promise to do something, and they've forgotten that promise, when that knowledge comes back into their mind, agape love should say, we're going to drop everything so we can go and do what we promised. We've forgotten, we're sorry, this should not have slipped up, this is a great oversight. But all too many times, when we think about agape love, it's something that Christians fail at, and the world sometimes looks at that and says, well, you're not any different than we are. Now, in this particular case, the fella should have remembered that he'd made that promise to Joseph. And he should have followed through. Had he had agape love, he should have gone to the king and pleaded. There's this guy in prison, and he needs to be released. Even if that meant that this king's servant was going to lose his life. But once again, he, like so many others, was willing to at least promise kindness, but failed to follow through with something like agape love. Now, as we start looking at this word, chesed, we find that it's used, as I said, in several different ways. Sometimes it's associated with a covenant. Sometimes it is associated with loyalty. Sometimes it is associated with doing a favor. But we also, as we look at this important Old Testament term, we sometimes find it joined with the people who were poor, or perhaps the people who were suffering some kind of disadvantage. Sticking with the Old Testament, because this is where a word is found, let's move a little more deeply into God's word. Let's head over to the book of Joshua. Fairly early in the book, Joshua chapter 2, we have some information about Jericho, Rahab, and the spies. There were some spies that God designated, wanted them to go in to check out the land of Canaan, especially around the area of Jericho, and these men did exactly that. They meet up with Rahab. The Bible says that Rahab protected those men. And as she was protecting those men, the text tells us that word got back to the king, that spies from the Israelites had come into Rahab's house, but Rahab still continued to defend these men. Rahab told the men of Israel, the spies, that they knew. The people were aware of the fact that Israel was in the land, and they, the people in the land, were terrified. Rahab also made a request. She said, I know you're coming. I know the invasion is on the way. But when you, the enemy force, comes, she said, I want you to deal kindly with me and my household. That's the word. And after Rahab asked for this chesed, the word being used, we find a response from the spies in verse 14 of Joshua 2. Let's look at that now. And the men said unto her, our life for yours. That is, we're going to put, you know, exchange our lives. If ye utter not this, our business. You need to make sure that you stay quiet about what we're doing here. And it shall be when Jehovah giveth us the land that we will deal, and here's that word, when we come in, we've got the land, we're going to deal kindly with you. Now think about being in the position that Rahab was in. You know that the enemy's headed your way at some point. And it looks like that's going to be pretty much imminent. And you make this deal, you make this arrangement with the spies, and they say to you, tell you what, we will, when we come into the land, you've helped us out, we're going to kind of return the favor. We will make sure that you are not going to suffer any kind of molestation. Now I suspect for a lot of people, they'd say that's a pretty good deal. I mean, if we're going to have invaders come in and they're going to literally wipe out our town, get rid of our community, boy, that is good news. Especially when we consider that Jericho, the inhabitants there were at a distinct advantage. We might, and that's why I mentioned earlier the idea of being needy, the idea of being downtrodden. The people of Jericho were needy. But you know, as good as the people of Israel were to Rahab and her house, there is not, from what I can find in the text, a single indication of the people of Israel providing something like agape love. In fact, I'd submit for our consideration that as we look at what the spies promised to Rahab and her family, it was primarily a promise based on negative terms. The deal was, just as I read, we're not going to harm you. We're not going to molest you. We're not going to do anything that's going to hurt you or kill your family. And once again, if you're going to be on the losing end of the battle, that sounds like a pretty good deal. I didn't read it. But if you were to also look at verse 19 in this chapter, you would find that this deal offered by the spies is or was a conditional deal. The spies said, Rahab, if you go out in the street, if there are members of your household and they go out into the street, we want you to know that you can be killed. If your family is out there in the street as we're going through the invading process, they can be killed. And not only is it possible for them to be killed, if someone dies because you didn't stay in the household like our deal describes, we, the Israelites, the Hebrews, were free from any blame. This was a deal. May I suggest that if agape love had been practiced on this occasion, here's how the text would read. The people of Israel would have said, it's not just that we're going to refuse to molest you, but we're willing to give our life for your life. You're our enemy, but we're willing to sacrifice our life to help you. We, as people who are practicing agape love, we will protect you whether you're in the street or whether you're in your home. Rather than just not hurting you, which again, that's not bad, but rather than just refusing to hurt you, we're going to do every single thing that we can to bless you. We're going to give you protection. We're going to help you with food. We're going to help you with water. We're going to make sure that you've got secure housing. Well, that would have been a far better deal. But the word chesed in this instance doesn't go nearly that far. You see, and here's the point, if it's not yet clear, the intent of the lesson. When we think about the love, the compassion, the kindness from the world, put it in terms of going down to a public place. And in that public place, there's a man who says, I'm homeless. A lot of people will take out their wallet or open up their purse, and they'll say, well, let me see how much money I've got here. Maybe they're tight like me and can't get the wallet out. But, and they say, I've got $5, or I've got $10, and let me give you that $5 or $10. Well, that's a nice thing to do. That's showing kindness, and maybe that's repaying the favor. Our world has that expression, paying it forward. Agape love is not paying it forward. Agape love has been compared to getting the guy who is a homeless guy off Skid Row and saying, we're going to go down and have a 5-course meal for you. Is that not a lot different than someone who simply says, here's $5 for some fries and a shake? It's all the difference in the world. But all too often the world says, well, you know, we've given you the $5, we've helped you a little bit, we've not molested you, we've not turned you into the police, and lo and behold, look at us, look at the good thing that we did. The New Testament ethic goes far, far, far beyond that. True love makes people stand out. If we live by agape love, we will literally be some of the most distinctive, some of the most unusual, some of the strangest people that our world ever sees or is affected by. Another fellow, famous man, and again looking at this passage maybe a little differently than you've read it in the past, but another example of someone who was needy was a guy by the name of Daniel. Pulling from Daniel chapter 1, highlighting some verses but not reading them, you may remember that Daniel, as well as some others, became a captive, taken from his home. Daniel 1 verse 5 says that he was put into a 3-year training program for the king's service. Daniel chapter 1 verse 7 was given a new name, a Babylonian name. And as good as this might sound to somebody, and again, he wasn't killed, apparently wasn't molested, he's taken captive, removed from his home, but you know, he's still being treated pretty well by the king's household. you know, we want to tie you in somehow with your royal service, and we're going to train you for free, and we're going to give you, you know, free food that's not going to be the kind of sewage that we talked about this morning. He wasn't being fed dog food, to use the illustration from earlier today. But Daniel was in a bad spot. This generosity, if you will, from the king was not a good thing for him. You see, he was someone who was committed to God and to the Old Testament way of life. And now that he's in a different country, a foreign country, he's being ordered around by people. Part of what Daniel was told is found in Daniel 1 verse 8. The text there says that he was being ordered to eat the king's food. And that was not always going to be consistent with the Old Testament laws. But you know, Daniel 1 verse 9, and this is the key verse. Daniel 1 9 says he received chesed. There is that kindness that was shown to this man by a king's officer. And the result of this kindness is found in Daniel chapter 1 verse 10. This king's officer understood he had a man. He was willing to have compassion on Daniel. He understood Daniel's situation, at least to some degree. And yet this fellow was also thinking in terms of, the king wants me to keep these guys healthy. And if they're not eating the king's fine foods, they're probably going to grow weak and pale. And that's not going to work out very well. And I'm responsible for the health of these guys. So if I abide by the dietary laws that this fellow wants to live by, they're probably going to get sick. And because they're not looking so swell, and that's my job, the king is going to kill me. He's going to cause me to lose my head. Now, the kindness that this official showed to Daniel was not bad. I mean, he agreed to work within the food ideas that Daniel was proposing. But as kind as this man was, the kindness still didn't come to the same level as agape love in the New Testament. You see, and this is where a lot of people, even in the church, fail. Agape love, if people have it, it's not just being a good person. It's not just being a decent person. Many look at their lives and they think, well, I'm a good person. I am a nice person. I do many good things. No, no, no. That's not agape love. That's not the standard that God has given. Agape love in Daniel chapter 9 would have caused this king's officer to go to the king and stand up for Daniel. Might have caused him to lose his head. Maybe it would have meant that he was also going to be taken down there to the prison. But the chesed was not nearly equal to the agape love described in the New Testament. You see, when we began to look at the New Testament and see what it says about love, and when we began to go back to the Old Testament and take a word which is about as close as we're going to get to the New Testament concept of agape, agape wins out every single time. It is heads and shoulders above what the world understands, and I think even for some younger Christians, way beyond what they understand. It is the kind of love, as we've mentioned before, that severs broken relationships. It is the kind of love which is so powerful, it is able and should and would in every case eliminate selfishness if we're applied. It is a love which causes someone to truly put God first in his or her life. It is a love which makes our congregation strong. It is the love that a parent has for the child that we talked about this morning. Remember, 2 Kings chapter 4, the Shunammite woman, how she's cared for a child. The child is in the head, and then mom goes after the prophet of God and says, "You are coming with me. I'm not leaving without you." That's agape love. It helps when people have agape love, even if it's just one employee in the workplace. It helps employees be the best people in the world. And it makes the place where we're employed a much better place. It helps leave our world a cleaner and safer place. Society often says to us directly or indirectly, and even to our kids, do nice and be good. God says, here's my message. You love as I love. The world comes along and says, well, don't hurt people. You may have different views, you may have different opinions, but just don't hurt folks. God says you actively love to the best of your ability every single individual, even if they're your enemies. The unsaved, they cry out for revenge. Well, I just like him to suffer a little bit. I don't hope that he would die or die in a painful way. God says you heap coals of fire. You do good to the people who hate you, because that's what true love is. Non-Christians, and we've seen it hundreds of times in our lives if we've lived very long, they scheme and they connive, trying to come up with some way to destroy an enemy. God says you love them. You have compassion on them. Pray for your opponents. The way of Christ, the way associated with agape love, is vastly superior to what the world describes on every level. And it is so massive, so important, so significant, so distinctive that maybe that's why the New Testament uses this word and expresses this concept over and over and over and over. Literally hundreds of times in the New Testament we find some kind of reference, some kind of information about agape love. I think all too often Christians finally come to an understanding of what agape love is too late in life. Maybe the last final days, weeks, years. And they finally get it. But hopefully we're someone who is a Christian that the light bulb has somehow gone off at some point in the past. Maybe that's why too Jesus said in speaking about the saved, it is a narrow way. There are not many people in life who are willing to truly demonstrate agape love. Not once, not twice, not today, not tomorrow, but every single day that they live. If you want to make a difference in your home, if you want to make a difference in your school, if you want to make a difference in your job, if you want to make a difference in your neighborhood, agape love. And it's a choice. I've said at least a couple of times during this series, it is not always the easiest choice. It may be one of the most difficult things you ever do. But it is the right choice. It is a godly choice. And it is a life-changing choice, both for you and the people you interact with. Today, as our day continues, tomorrow as we go into another week, as we deal with people, especially the people that frustrate us, irritate us, and maybe an enemy, ask yourself, am I truly committed to agape love in this situation? It will literally change your life and leave you in a state pleasing to God. If we're not a Christian, there's really not much use in becoming or in trying to practice agape love. But if we have, if we've come to understand what God's Word says about conversion, faith, repentance, confession, baptism into Christ for all of our failures, some of which not acting in a Christian way, not showing agape love. Today, every single sin can be washed away by accessing the benefits of Christ's blood through baptism. If we have become a Christian, then as we depart soon, let's think about whether or not agape love is driving us in our life, our decisions, every single day. Can we help you become a Christian? Can we help you get back on the right road in some way? If so, would you let us know as we stand and sing the selected song?